today is a horrible day for our podcast.
I'm excited for it.
This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mizzou Sports Podcast back in Columbia. We haven't done one of these in a while with the equipment and everything. I'm Daniel Jones with Cameron Teague Robinson. First podcast after SEC Media Days. Basketball had Media Day today. We're kind of getting to the end of summer where football is starting to come up and become relevant. Basketball has found a way to stay relevant all summer, mostly because Konza Martin keeps talking to the press and getting recruits. But that's what we're talking about today. So, how are things going?
Pretty good.
I did a lot of podcasts in Atlanta with just my phone, with no intro, with no real editing. I didn't have any editing software on my computer. It's a pretty bare bones operation.
Yeah.
So you might be able to tell a difference in the production quality today.
At least,
I hope so.
I hope so too. I mean, Danny's phone isn't the greatest phone, so we won't get into that.
Yeah, you dropped that. Like I, Danny's phone, not very good. Okay, moving on to the next thing.
We wage a
war daily. Cam as an Apple brand loyalist, and I as the anti-Apple brand loyalist.
And I'm the correct one in the newsroom.
Uh huh. Okay.
I'm just saying.
I am not bound to Apple like some people.
I'm not bound to them.
If Android
and anything else was better, I would use their stuff, but it's not better, so I use Apple stuff.
When is the last time that you actually used a non-Apple?
I had an Android phone.
When?
For like a year and a half.
When?
I just got my new iPhone. I just got my new iPhone last April.
You have not had an iPhone since April.
Yes, I have.
You had an Android before that?
Yeah. No. Not this past April.
Yeah.
Okay.
When's the last time you had an Android
phone? So a year. It's been a year. When I moved here, I did the whole prep beat with an Android phone. I didn't get this iPhone until the summer before I took the Mizzou beat. So it's been a year.
What kind of phone did you have?
I had I don't even remember. They have 18,000 different types. I swear. Yeah, I did. 100%. I still have it at home. It's sitting in my closet.
I don't know, man.
I'm skeptical. I did.
I'm skeptical.
I did. It was awful.
Please.
Never held a charge.
Please.
It was awful.
Please.
It's awful.
Anyway, enough about that. SEC Media Days was exciting. Got a chance to talk to Barry Odom. Got a chance to talk to Drew Locke. All the other coaches in the SEC spoke. There weren't any like real entertaining characters at SEC Media Days this year. There wasn't anybody there that was trying to make it exciting. There wasn't anybody there like Steve Spurrier who would really relish the moment. It was just, yeah, we have great expectations. We have opportunities. The words expectations and opportunities was used. I mean, those words were used
in
probably 10,000 times in four days. So that's just kind of how SEC Media Days goes. But at the end of the week, there were votes on all SEC teams.
Yeah, you're telling me Nick Saban didn't move the needle
for
excitement at SEC Media Days?
He said... He said that the quarterback controversy was created and perpetuated by the media.
Yeah, exactly. Because the media is the people that pulled their quarterback in the last championship game. We're the people that did that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was.
So you're welcome, Alabama fans. We won you a national championship.
AL.com's decision to pull Jalen Hurts at halftime of the national championship game and put in a freshman.
That was a great decision by AL.com.
I was. No wonder they're award winning.
Yeah.
They make decisions like that.
And national championship winning.
Exactly. But Mizzou had six players make all SEC teams at the end of last week. Three of them made the first team. Drew Locke, Albert Okwuegbunam, Corey Fittone. Terry Beckner made the second team, and Emmanuel Hall and Tucker McCann made the third team. So there were a couple others that I voted for. I did not vote for Tucker McCann. I did vote for the other five, And there were a couple of others that I thought, other Mizzou players that I thought were worthy of recognition. That I, three of them I voted for, and then two others that I think still had a pretty good case to be made.
Right.
And so I did a story about that that ran online yesterday, and then also in yesterday's paper. Well, I guess it would be today's paper, Tuesday's paper. But two of those guys are linemen, offensive linemen, and one other is on special teams. So Paul Adams, I think, was a guy. So he's a right tackle, starting right tackle. I think he's the best offensive lineman Mizzou has. And I think Mizzou's offensive line is the was the best offensive line last season in the SEC. So Mizzou hasn't had any offensive lineman get any accolades for the last, like, 2 years at least. And it seems not to add up because their offensive line has been so good.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think Paul Adams as the best player on the best line deserved a nod.
I agree. I was surprised to not see Paul Adams on that list.
What do you think about the offensive line? What do you recall about the offensive line from last season?
For me, it's just so hard to catch the offensive line on an eye test because when the game happens, you're not looking at the offensive line. Unless there's a few times where I remember specifically Drew Lock turned around to hand the ball off to whether it was Roundtree or, and I slipped his name, the other.
Demarie?
No. Ish Witter. And we did, me and Garrick did a podcast on Monday, and I couldn't remember Ish's name, and I had to look it up, and I was so mad that I forgot it. But
it just blanked.
It just blanked.
Just no. Just blanked.
Nothing.
Just nothing.
I had nothing. I didn't have a letter. I didn't have anything. I was
that,
like,
one guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Who gets hit a lot.
Exactly. Who actually had a really good year last year.
And really good pass block.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
But there were times last year where I remember them just them opening holes, and I'm just going, whoa, that was a humongous hole. Mm-hmm. They had pretty good pass blocking for Drew. I think the running backs did a pretty good job blocking as well. But it's just offensive line is just so hard to gauge because when the second the ball is hiked, your eye is on Drew Lock or your eye is on the running back. And then for a split second, your eye is on the offensive line when the running back's going through and then it's, you're not looking at him anymore. It's just such an underappreciated position. And again, I think it's hard to tell which offensive lineman should be on all SEC teams as well. Or all conference teams. I do think if you're the best offensive line in the conference, you have to have somebody on there. I think that is a given, in my opinion, especially when you're bringing everybody back.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's hard for me, definitely, to make assessments on other offensive linemen on other teams.
Right.
Because, like you said, you kind of are watching them a little bit, but for the most part, you're watching what's happening with Drew Lock, right. You're watching the receivers,
right.
And
you
even
only,
sometimes coverages.
Right.
So
you
I guess
only see them when they make up when they're blocking when they have a block,
right?
Or
they go
blocking back or a hold. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only time you ever see an offensive lineman. But yeah.
So if you watch them throughout the course of a season, maybe some guys stand out. But as far as watching other teams' linemen, it's hard to definitely get a gauge of like the good ones on other teams. So that was a challenge for me, but I personally felt like Paul Adams was worthy of a spot on the SEC team. He got a vote from me, but he did not make it. Another offensive lineman that I voted for was Tristan Colon Castillo, who is the center. He was my second team vote at center. But kind of along those same lines, if you're the center for the best offensive line in the conference, then you're the one who's responsible more than anybody else for the line being
so
good.
Right.
And in doing research for the story and in those picks, like, it's not just that Mizzou had the most yards, you know, offensively. Obviously, that's a reflection of the offensive line, but as far you can kind of like dig into advanced metrics that are designed to gauge the strength of an offensive line, and Missouri's really graded out well in those advanced metrics. Like, they were second in a metric called standard down line yards, which looks at running plays on first and 10 and then second and like medium or second and short,
right.
And how the line blocks on those run plays. So if they have like a metric for the amount of yards that the line is responsible for. Like, the line is responsible 100% for the first 4 yards of a running play, and then like 60 or 70% responsible or 50% responsible for like the next 3 yards after that.
All right.
And then once a running play goes like 15 yards, it's the running back who's making plays for the last 7 or 8 yards. So anyway, Mizzou was really good at getting running backs 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards on first down and second down. That's a good offensive line. A good offensive line can do that, and Missouri was the second best offensive line in the country at doing that. They were also really good at not giving up negative plays on run plays, and they were really good at not giving up sacks. They gave up the fewest amount of sacks in the SEC last season, even though they passed the ball a lot.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of teams that don't give up a lot of sacks don't throw the ball a lot. Mississippi State was tied for Mizzou for fewest sacks, and they have a mobile quarterback in Nick Fitzgerald. So they did a lot of quarterback run plays, a lot of option plays. Mizzou didn't do any option plays last year. Right. Drew Locke isn't running the ball anywhere. He's staying in the pocket, and he's not getting sacked. Yeah. So that's a reflection of a good offensive line. Anyway, that was my justification for Tristan Colon Castillo. He's the center on the best offensive line in the conference, one of the best in the country. If he's the center, he's the one in charge more than anybody else.
Right.
He deserves recognition.
Yeah, I agree.
Finally, Rashad Floyd got my vote at kick returner, returned 2 kicks for touchdowns last year on punts on 11 tries. 2 out of 11 is pretty good when you're returning kicks for touchdowns. He kind of flew under the radar last season. He didn't qualify like as a season-long returner, like his stats didn't show up on leaderboards just because he didn't return enough kicks and he didn't do it for a long enough period over the course of the season. But he got my vote, too, just because he was so explosive.
Yeah, no, I could agree with all three of those. I think the only one I would have probably put on my ballot, and it's kind of hard to decide if you put him on your ballot or not. This is just me not looking at stats from all the other SEC teams right now because you did all that, not me. My thought would be, I think someone who else probably could have got strong consideration would be Terrence Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say he's Mizzou's best linebacker.
For sure.
Yeah, I think he's another guy who probably, even if he wasn't on that, I think probably deserved strong consideration. Like I said, I'm not looking at every linebacker in the SEC stats right now in front of me. So, but I think he's a guy who I think definitely should have been in the conversation for all SEC team.
Terrence Hall was not on my ballot. I felt like he was made a really strong case, but the SEC has so many good linebackers, inside linebackers and pass rushing linebackers that I feel like he might be top 10, but maybe not top 6.
No, yeah, I could see that, yeah.
So, but yeah, Terrence Hall was somebody else I wrote about as a guy who maybe earned consideration or at least a look. I don't know how many people seriously considered him to be an all-SEC linebacker. I know people that cover Mizzou pretty universally felt like he was deserving. A lot of people that cover Mizzou gave him a vote.
Yeah.
The other guy that I don't know might have in some cases was that I wrote about was Trevor Wallace Sims, right guard on the offensive line. So another offensive lineman that may have gotten recognition, but for me, having those other two guys, Tristan Castillo and Paul Adams, was reflective of the offensive line.
Right.
So anyway, there's a number of guys out there, and then you could even look at like Demaryius Crockett. I think if he were to play a full season last year, he might have gotten some more looks as a running back. I think Tucker McCann was definitely worthy of a spot. He's on the ballot. You can only fill out 2 kickers, so you pick kind of like first team, second team, and when they release all, you know, the teams at the end, they have first, second, third. I think if I had a third vote, Tucker McCann would have been that guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's a good reflection of where he's at too. So those are your guys on the All SEC team. Those are the guys that I thought maybe deserved recognition that didn't make it on the team. But you know, if Mizzou performs well, especially if they start out well, and it's hard to gauge like what your perception will be at the end of the year based on when you play well. But I think the loss to Purdue last year, getting just waxed by Purdue, and then a couple of big losses at the beginning of the season really just turned people off on Mizzou throughout the season.
No matter how well they ended the
exactly,
season.
Exactly, and by the end, you know, even though they were beating the pants off of Florida and Tennessee and Vanderbilt, they weren't getting the benefit of the doubt because they had lost games earlier in the season, and when they win the games at the end, it's like, oh, well, those other teams must not be performing very well.
Right, right.
So maybe if they get those wins at the beginning, they earn some of the benefit of the doubt going into next, you know, the second half of the year, or maybe it's just Mizzou and, you know, I don't know. Drew Lock seems to think, and I understand where he's coming from, and I tend to agree that for the most part, around the league, if Missouri is succeeding at something, it's more of a reflection on the other team not performing very well. If they complete a deep pass, it's because somebody blew coverage. If they win a game, it's because the other team didn't play very well or is having a down season.
Right.
So I can understand the frustration from him on that.
But that was my thing at the end of the year. I think when we did these Facebook Lives after games and things of that nature, and everybody would always be like, Mizzou still has yet to beat a team above 500 or still yet to beat a quality team. They're good points. Like, it makes sense. But at the same point, a win's a win, especially in that league. Like, getting wins in SEC isn't easy, and they're beating the pants off teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you're talking about Florida and Tennessee. They were bad last year, but they're beating the pants off these
guys. And then, you know, in a lot of those games at the end of the year, Florida definitely gave teams, after they played Mizzou, Florida played a lot of teams close.
Right.
Tennessee played other teams close. I mean, Florida and Tennessee were within a point of each other, and that was at the beginning of the season. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, you talk about how much teams change, and obviously Missouri was like the poster child of that. They were, you know, second half of the season, the first half of the season were totally different. But it's all the same guys.
Yeah,
it's all the same coaches.
Yep.
It's not like it's a whole different roster.
Right.
It's still the same players going out there. So as much as we talk about teams changing over the course of a season and things of that nature, I mean, they shouldn't be overstated or understated. I mean, they'd happen, but at the same time, it's still the same roster.
Yeah.
So the team that Missouri, you know, won with is the same that they lost with.
Yep.
And it goes for the, you know, that it goes that way for their opponents too.
Yeah. Yep.
So anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree. You play the schedule you're given.
Right.
And you got to win the games. Props to them for winning the games. I can see the point where people are like, they haven't beaten a team over 500. I get it. 100% get it.
Mm-hmm.
But you play the teams that are in front of you. You beat them.
I don't want to be that guy saying at the beginning of the season that Mizzou gets no respect.
Yeah, same. I don't want to do that either. Because, I mean, they shouldn't have been, what were they, 1-4?
Right.
I mean, they were just bad losses.
Yeah, they got crushed by Purdue, too.
Yeah, that's a bad loss.
Right.
At home.
It takes a while to earn that respect. It takes multiple seasons and consistent levels of success.
Right.
You to get that benefit of the doubt.
I do think there's a difference between respect and just taking care of business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think Mizzou took care of business at the end of the season. I don't know. I can see where people say they haven't gained respect in the league or respect of certain fans because those teams weren't above 100, but you take care of business.
Yep. So moving on to basketball. Football camp also starts on August 3rd. So starting on August 3rd, we'll have regular reports out of camp. Looking ahead at the 2018 season. But in the meantime, Konzo Martin had a press conference today to talk about what passes for newsworthy in college basketball on July 24th.
Scheduling is breaking news. Now, Konzo talked a little bit about a lot of things today. Talked about Cullen Van Leer a little bit. So Cullen Van Leer obviously tore his ACL last year. I think Konzo said he believes today was the first day Cullen was back in the weight room, lifting, kind of rehabbing, doing things of that nature. So that's good to hear for Cullen. I think the biggest news out of the press conference was that, so there was new reports that the Utah game against Missouri, since they had home and home. So Missouri went to Utah last year. Utah was supposed to come here this year. That's been pushed to next year, the 2019-2020 season. So that game has now been replaced with Temple, a home and home with Temple. Now, this contract isn't finalized from what I've been told, but Temple is expected to come to Mizzou this year, and then Mizzou will go to Philadelphia in 2019-2020. Which pretty much puts a cap on almost all of Mizzou's stuff. I believe they have pretty much, obviously, their whole SEC schedule's done. I believe they have most of their non-conference schedule done. Obviously, they still have the home-and-home with UCF, home-and-home with Iowa State. They have the home-and-home with Xavier. and then they Paradise Jammer. They play Kennesaw State and a few others.
The Minnows, yeah, the tiny teams.
Exactly, yeah. So, but I think there's still a few more things that have to come out. Kanto said they have one more game they have to finish, and then they'll be good to go. But, yeah, that's pretty much the biggest thing. Oh, Xavier Pinson as well. Xavier Pinson's been on, like, Instagram and, like, not Twitter, but, like, Instagram and, like, maybe Snapchat. I don't follow him on Snapchat, though. But, like, things of, like, being at home or back in Chicago, like, videos, different things. I guess so kind of led to questions of, like, why isn't he at practice or why isn't he at Mizzou? I guess Kanzo Martin said today that Xavier had some personal issues he had to go take care of back home, and that he'll be back. He expects him back at Mizzou. This week is their last week of summer workouts, but he expects Xavier to be back with the team. Yeah. Not specifically this week, but just he said, I expect him to be back.
Going back to Cullen Van Leer, he tore his ACL against Arkansas.
Yeah, it's the last game of the season.
Right? That would have been beginning of March, kind of like first week of March.
Yeah, first week of March.
That's crazy that it's now the end of July and he's just now getting back in the weight room.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've had ACL injuries before.
They're not fun. I think it varies for people depending on like the severity of it and depending on how fast you want to rehab it.
How long were you laid up before you could like run again?
Well, my senior year, I tore it after my senior year soccer season, so I had no reason to rehab it. I was just like, I mean, I had reason, but it wasn't like I was coming back for a basketball season or so my athletic career was finished. So I was like, I would rehab it, but it wasn't like I wasn't in here like two or three times a day doing it.
Yeah.
But I think, so if I tore mine in February, I believe it was. I don't think I started to run. Like, I remember going to BG in the summer on crutches, just like for orientation stuff.
So you tore it in February?
Yeah, not during the season. I was at my friend's indoor national tournament.
Uh-huh.
And we were playing around on the beach.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I tore it.
So you tore it in February, and then by August, you were still on crutches?
Yeah, it wasn't August. It wasn't. It was like June when I had my orientation.
June. Okay.
Yeah. So I was like walking around campus on crutches for orientation, which sucked. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, there's not many hills in BG, but it still sucked. I think by August, I was out of my crutches, off my cast. Like, I was walking, but I wasn't really doing much. Listen, I didn't do much physical activity my freshman year of college.
A lot of thumb activity with video games. A lot of Xbox. Yep.
A lot of eating way too much food. So I didn't get back into doing any physical activity in terms of, like, running or anything until, like, probably December when I started. I played intramural basketball my freshman year, and that was probably December, January maybe. And I only played one game. I played the last game because I signed up and I was sick for 2 days and I was like, well, I guess I'll just play the last one.
Separate injury.
Exactly.
Or was it maybe tied to the ACL?
Maybe it was. Maybe it was me being too nervous. My body said, don't do this. But yeah, no, I didn't do anything else until like, I didn't do any physical activity probably until January. And that was, I mean, I rehabbed, like I got my knee going. I did a lot of pool stuff. My family was big on like strengthening your knees or whatever in a pool. Yeah. But I didn't do anything else till like January.
That's just crazy to think that it's that long.
Yeah.
It takes that long to get to a place where you can like actually run again.
Yeah. Yeah. Professional and college athletes, I give all props in the world to them because they do it and they come back and they do it I feel like that's quick.
Yeah. I mean, honestly,
it's not like he's running or anything, but just like getting back in the weight room, like
to have surgery to replace the tendon with another part, you know, a tendon from somewhere else in your body,
right?
And then to be back lifting on it.
And
so you assume if he's working out on it,
months,
he's been doing other stuff. You know, if he's now in the weight room on it, he's probably been doing other stuff recently too.
Yeah.
So it is kind of crazy that first of all, you know, you go that long without doing any physical activity as a college athlete.
Yeah.
You know, Cullen Van Leer was in the middle of a basketball season, torn, and then he goes immediately 4 months without probably doing anything.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of athletics. Yeah, Cullen Van Leer is the only guy to ever get hurt playing sports.
Right.
But just that timeline, you know, when you mentioned that, it was just like, wow.
Yeah.
It seems like a long time ago that he did that.
It does.
And now, I mean, Mitchell Smith, too, on that team, he tore his ACL in the first non-conference game of 2016.
Yeah.
Or I guess it would have been early 2017, January 4th or 5th of 2017. And he missed
The whole season.
The whole second half of that season, almost all the offseason, redshirted to continue to get better, you know, from his knee injury and also add weight. So that process just takes so long. It's crazy. And, you know, in college athletics, like, you have 4 years.
Yeah.
So it's a quick timetable. And unfortunately for Cullen Van Leer, it's gotten to the point where, you know, it's like his eligibility is kind of in question. Like, do you try to keep him around for a year? Does he medically retire?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that it's kind of got to that point for him where that's part of the conversation. Yeah. He's not talking about playing for a senior year.
Yeah, that's a tough part.
But yeah.
And Conza said they're still taking it one day at a time, so it doesn't seem like they're leaning in any specific way with Cullen, but yeah, that's tough.
Quickly, because Cam left his charger at the arena today and has to get back there before the doors close.
I did.
There was a Mizzou soccer player that made the under 20 English national team.
Yeah, for the World Cup. That's sweet. For the under 20 World
Cup. Under 20 Women's World Cup.
Right.
It's Mizzou's Zoe Smith.
Zoe Cross.
Zoe Cross.
Yep, she's a sophomore.
Midfielder.
Yep, she's, according to the stats from last year, she had 2 assists and 8 shots on goal. Was a midfielder for Missouri last year. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Props to Zoe Cross for doing, so we're living out basically what would probably be
every soccer player's dream.
I was going to say, your and I's dreams as athletes to play soccer for the national team, which didn't really work out so well.
Yeah.
And led to us now recording a podcast.
Yeah. And talking about someone else doing there. Yeah. That's sweet. That's an awesome thing. And it's good for Mizzou's program, too. I don't know how much publicity that gives Mizzou in England, but it's still cool to say, like, we have a player playing for the U20 World Cup.
A lot of Mizzou women's soccer games going to be broadcast in England after the Women's World Cup.
The
U20 World Cup.
You're going to see their recruits, just their location, just going to be all over England from now on.
That's right.
Just going to pile in the English
kids. Yep. Lions and Tigers. The English three Lions becoming Tigers.
Yep.
We'll see if that pipeline materializes.
Maybe Zoe Cross will bring it home.
It'll be going home. Could be.
Yeah. That's cool, though. That's awesome.
Yeah. Congrats to Zoe.
Yeah. I believe they have an exhibition game August 7th.
Start early.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those sports start really early. Yeah, that one and volleyball get going early.
Yeah.
Football, I mean, starts in September. It's one of the last ones to start in the fall.
Yeah.
So cool. Thanks for tuning in today.
Yeah.
That'll be it for us on this July.
I apologize. This is my fault.
What, that we're wrapping up?
That we're wrapping up,
Well, to be fair, it wasn't one of our more entertaining podcasts.
Yeah, true. We didn't have much else to talk about. Also, speaking of entertaining, we are still looking for punishments for our boss for losing our... I don't even remember what wager he lost. Oh, the draft wager.
Uh-huh.
We have yet to think of them because everybody's been kind of here or there, or we haven't been together as a staff in a while. So so maybe one of the future podcasts will be doing something. If you guys have suggestions for us, please let us know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We'd love to torture our boss on the podcast. It'd be a nice introduction for you guys.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's been on the podcast, but like, that's cool.
Yeah. I agree. That'd be great. Yeah. So tell us how we can make fun of our boss and torture him, as
fun.
Cam said. Yeah. In Cam's words.
Yeah.
Torture in Cam's words.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what he said.
Yes. Legally torture. I should specify.
Subscribe to our podcast. It helps audiences find us. You can rate us and follow us on Twitter. Cam at @CJ_Teague and me at @Daniel_M_Jones. Well,
Danny, cue the outro music.
Be sure and subscribe to Mizzou Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.